The following program is a presentation of Short Track America.
Gentlemen, start your engine!
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Yes. How do you find him the money? Tell me how you find him the money.
Well, actually, through a variety of means. But what we do is we provide the proposal for him, and we actually.
So what I'm saying is, you guys don't actually find the money. Who finds the money? Who finds the money?
And really, we cultivate them.
Hey, Tom. Who finds the money?
We can get him a shot eventually.
Hey, Tom.
Bushy's car.
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
Who finds the money? Who in this game finds the money for these guys?
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hi, I'm Scott Dolly, driver of the number 74 Bomber, DeSoto Super Speedway. You're listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
It's no wonder everybody says nobody beats a Dayton Andrews Dodge deal. I mean nobody. They must sell 200 cars, trucks, and vans to break all sales records. In order to do that, they'll guarantee $1,000 if they can't beat any deal you bring into them on any new or used vehicle in stock. Every new Dodge drastically reduced. Every used vehicle drastically reduced. How about no money down? Take advantage of these great offers with lender's approval. $1,000 guaranteed includes rebates, and they reserve the right to buy back the vehicle from the selling dealer to give to their customer at a lower price. Ask about the $4,000 minimum trade-in allowance. Check out the Dodge Caravans, the Durangos, and the Neons. This week, Dayton Andrews Dodge is offering the lowest prices and also no money down. Call 321-0500. See that the Dayton Andrews Dodge way beats all the other ways to shop for a vehicle. 22nd Avenue and US 19 in St. Petersburg, Dayton Andrews Dodge.
No, it's not the way.
Real Racing USA at the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in Bradenton, Florida. We're back again.
I have the money.
That's a dollar. That's not enough.
I don't care.
That's not enough money.
I have the money.
That ain't even enough to go to Cheetahs on.
So here with Rick Angies,
Craig Clark,
and Jack Smith.
We're here.
And Keith Grant from RSI.
And all we want is some truth.
The truth. The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth. And the money.
We ain't ever going to get the money. We can't even get the food now.
No.
Jack ordered late. Jack ordered late with the nuclear.
No, we got to pay now.
The nuclear wings.
Well, you know what that is. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. Hey, next Tuesday, the 29th. We're going to be featuring the All Harley Drags right here on Real Racing USA. What's the matter, Craig? You're freaking out, man.
Go ahead.
Beginning May 29th, Real Racing USA will feature 1/2 hour of news and interviews from All Harley Drag Racing Association. Real Racing USA features the top drivers in motorsports each Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. We already know all that, both. Steve LaTemp. Is that how you say
it? Stevie LaTemp. Stagin' Stevie.
Well-known voice of the IHRA and AHDRA joins the Real Racing USA team to bring the latest news, results, and interviews to the World Wide Web. Real Racing USA is produced by Short Track America and Carnac.com. Anyway, that's just a little blurb to bring people up to date on we're going straight.
Absolutely.
We're going straight.
I'm telling you
it's
what.
It's about damn time.
Yeah.
220 miles an hour straight down.
I'm telling you. On two wheels. Well, you guys, you knew it was going to happen. You know, she's made a name for herself. She's in the middle of the second row at the Indy 500. And this summer, Danica Patrick will be in Playboy.
Get out of here.
Oh, yeah, boy.
She'll be in Playboy.
She'll be the
in the midst of her third Indy season, the hot racing star will make an appearance in the Playboy. However, racing fans hoping to see Danica Patrick nude will be disappointed as she's unlikely to take her clothes off and only handle a Jason Burmeister interview. She's going to be in Playboy.
I'm shocked.
I'm absolutely
shocked.
That's not for equal time.
And, Jack, this one's for you. On Retirement Living TV tomorrow night, the James Hilton story. 70-some-year-old James Hilton will be featured on the Retirement Living TV.
Well, who the hell is James Hilton?
The 70-year-old guy who tried to qualify for NASCAR in Daytona.
Somebody who's close to
you. Oh, that's right. That's right. I thought that was a joke. He really did do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Comcast Network and DirecTV Channel 364. Watch for the James Hilton story on Yellow Mountain Road.
You know, one of the most exciting things to come down the pike for short track stock car racing in a long time is happening this weekend at Kentucky Speedway.
Frank Kimmel is
bringing his
the big show,
150 lap, $10,000 to win bomber deal, street stock bomber. Now, later this week on Karnak.com, we're going to have some updates, some live updates happening coming from Beckner.
Right.
And Brian Beckner. And some other folks. Man, that's going to be one cool deal. I cannot wait to see
that'd be great.
What did he say? Didn't he say how many were already pre-registered? Like an ungodly amount.
I believe he said 150 he was expecting for the race. And I think you probably get close to 200.
Oh, at least.
Should be wild.
Remember the old days with the down there, three wide and all the way around the track.
Three, four
and
wide.
250 laps later and smoke and just insane.
Yeah, that's actually very cool. And
AT&T, you were talking about your Sprint deal.
Yeah, Jack, how's that phone?
Sprint pissing you off and
right
stuff.
Now, Sprint sucks.
Sprint sucks. Guess what? AT&T won.
Yes.
They got to be on the hood
last
Saturday night.
That's right.
Court ordered.
And I'm going to tell you what. I want it's thanks to that, AT&T, and thanks to Ray Everham, that Short Track America is going to bring another show to its itinerary here. Monday night, we don't know what the name of it is. Terry Wall is going to be the host of the show. He has a co-host that is yet to be named, and the name of the show is yet to be named. But it's thanks to those two items that we're going to bring a little nasty car to Short Track America.
Sweet.
All the news that you really don't need to know, but the stuff that you really enjoy.
What?
Yeah. Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it. Half the crap on the message boards, racing message boards that we see, half the crap is stuff that's absolutely irrelevant that people don't even need to know. But it's the stuff they want.
How do we think all that up?
Huh?
How do we think all that up?
I don't know.
Crap in equals crap out.
Okay. So, Craig, tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk tonight about. First of all, before you do that, tonight on the show we're going to have Patrick Sheltra from Indiantown, Florida, who's in the top 10 in points in the ARCA series and is also a pretty renowned dirt late model driver, I believe. And we're going to talk to him. We're also going to talk to the guy who won, Justin Ratliff, who won the Lucas Oil late model race. Justin's like 20 years old. This was like the biggest win of his entire life ever. He just won that race last week. We're going to have him on later on. And we're going to talk about safety. That's your cue, Craig.
That's my cue.
Again. Phase two.
We're
ongoing series covering racing motorsports safety.
Getting the messages out, talking about things that have occurred at tracks, what tracks need to have in place. I mean, that's always a hot button with a lot of them. And in the studio with us tonight is Keith Grant, who we worked together on developing new strategies, techniques, tools, and equipment, and all that to further our sport.
Also in-house with us tonight, we're going to have one of the guys from DeSoto Speedway.
Correct.
Who's one of our safety guys, EMT and firefighter, Rob Findley.
Excuse me. Isn't that DeSoto Super Speedway?
DeSoto Super Speedway.
Bradenton?
Bradenton,
is that
Florida.
DeSoto
Super
Speedway?
Southern Tampa Bay.
I know that place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Hi, John. Okay, so we're going to be covering
thanks for the name placards there.
Yeah, isn't that cool? What's your name?
Racing Rick Angie.
What's your name?
Didn't I used to have a column?
Oh, give me a break, man. Real I'm not the old codger.
The old codger.
John
Jack.
Barker's the old codger.
Yeah, answer your cell phone, Rick. And also we'll have hopefully some other guests here in the studio when they come in. We'll announce them at that point. Other safety guys from around the area that do various tracks and events. So what's new in the ZipFlex world? You've been cranking out some equipment.
Yeah, we're making some saws, and this last week we been working on a couple other gadgets. Let's put it that way, because there's a lot of things out there that make the job easier.
Jack's bidding on eBay, so don't mind him.
You lost it, didn't you?
You lost it.
At the last second.
You man. Lost it.
I was all the way up to 450. Somebody went to 502.
Holy.
We got to go 504 now. Too late?
No.
Too late. It's gone.
That's okay.
It's gone.
It'll be okay.
That's okay.
Quick, get the Prozac.
Yeah.
So, we were talking about, we also have some props here in the studio with us.
Hans in.
Get a little closer to the mic. Yeah, that's better.
That's a Hans device.
I brought a Hans in, and I brought one of our new prototype rescue wrenches that we put together that makes it easier for track crew to take apart wings and Zeus buttons and all sorts of different
things. I know what it's like not to wear one of those.
Yeah. A lot of people do.
You've been bounced around a couple times, haven't you?
A couple times, yeah. I know what it's like not to wear one of those.
It's not fun.
I've felt my head almost leave my body.
Why?
And that's not a good feeling.
That's sorry.
Go ahead.
Body mechanics, man. You hit that hard, things stretch where they're not supposed to stretch.
Now, obviously, Craig, you work in the motorsports business. I mean, this is what you do. You come do the radio thing, you know, and like that, and you're involved in things outside of racing in the entertainment business, but... Obviously, this is what one of your main things in life is motorsport safety, as it is with Keith. Why is it important, do you think, that we focus and take time for this show from all the silliness that we carry on with to do this show? Why do we focus on, why is it important to focus this stuff on motorsport safety?
Well, safety is important for several reasons. Of course, the hot topic has always been if Earnhardt was still around, most of the advances that have occurred in safety probably would never have taken place. It takes an incident, tragedy, some kind of an experience for people to realize, you know, there are other ways to do things. We take and learn from those experiences and improve upon strategies, techniques, equipment, the way that we operate from that point. But it usually takes something. We try and be proactive. The problem is it gets down to...
Show me the money.
The Who almighty dollar.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
and
isn't that what the Pope was talking about?
Okay. Right. It does come down to the almighty dollar. But... what it comes down to dollar wise, and I understand. I mean, safety is important. I I cringe when I go to racetracks that don't have anything at all. But on the other hand, all this is an entertainment business, right? Okay. And to max on safety, it costs a lot of money. Okay.
To match.
To max out on safety, it costs a lot
of money.
To do
it really
top right. Really good. Okay. So somewhere that cost has to be passed down, right? Right?
Correct.
Okay. So when it gets passed down, when it makes it down to the ticket booth, to the Saturday night short track fan paying to get in that only makes $500 a week or whatever, and they can't afford to go, and they stop going, guess what? You don't have a job. I don't have a job. They don't have no place to race. Right. So now what do we do about that?
And the other side of that is that same person, when their loved one gets injured or whatever.
Craig, bottom line, they don't go, we don't work. There is no racing. Bottom line. That's the bottom line. There is no if, ands, or but. They don't need. We don't
who
need safety.
Go?
The people.
You can't afford not to have safety.
No, you cannot afford not to have safety. But there has to be a way that this has to be bounced around so the person that's coming in the front gate doesn't have to absorb that. Because when you do, they're going to stop coming because they can't afford to go. When it becomes the price of going to a half a price of going to Disney World, Busch Gardens, or whatever, when it's going to cost $40 to go in the front gate because we need so much safety out on that track to protect these drivers, they're not going to go. There's not going to be any racing.
The money has to come from somewhere.
Right. Exactly. Right. That's what I'm saying.
The other thing about that is that when there's not a lot of sponsors involved with the tracks anymore, somebody's going to pick up the cost.
Right.
So, you know, on the flip side of that, you can't blame that all on safety. There's a lot of promotion.
I'm not blaming it on safety at all. I'm not blaming it on safety at all.
He makes a valid point. Right. It comes down to the money.
Gas is $4 a gallon, too.
Exactly.
So are you going to drive any less or any more?
I'm going to drive less.
Go ahead.
I am going to drive less. I am going
to
drive less.
Unless you absolutely have to.
Unless I absolutely have to go somewhere. I am not going
right. to. Right. It's an entertainment thing. The people are only going to go if they want to be entertained. They know what they have to pay to get in the
gate. We are right now at the edge of people paying to go. It's getting close to, you know, I mean, special shows are $20. $20 at any show at Lakeland.
It's getting into
the big
profits.
Shows are $25-$30. When, you know, and Lakeland, we've got good safety at Lakeland. That's why they have to charge that $25-$30 because, you know, they have top-notch safety. You know, it's a top-notch facility with, you know, aluminum things, whatever, and all that good stuff. But the Saturday night short track fan wants to go to the races for $15. You know, when you start digging into where it's going to cost them $200, $300 to go to watch the races, okay, on top of that, now you're talking about the guy that's got to pay to get in the pit, the bomber guy or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
He's now spending $600 to go race for $100?
Right.
It's over, buddy.
And what drives that cost up?
Everything. Everything does. But bottom line is that if they stop coming, we stop going.
You're right. But what drives that cost up?
What drives that cost up? Everything does. Insurance.
Oh,
safety.
Stop right there.
Safety.
Stop right there. Insurance. And why insurance? Does insurance drive it up?
Why does insurance drive it up?
Well, let me say
because
this.
It depends on what the coverage is, but I can tell you one thing. Insurance don't give a damn. They'll let them do some stupid shit on a racetrack. They will let them do dumb, stupid stuff.
Until it becomes enough over the entire United States.
People die.
People die
and they still get insurance.
Right, until their underwriting department says, okay, we're going to have to change
K&K
this.
Insurance has been writing insurance since 1960-something. How many people have died and they've paid? How many people have gotten injured and they paid?
And they raise their rates.
That's normal insurance deal, okay? That's the part of the racing thing. And like I said, it all has to trickle down.
Right. There is what you're trying to get is a balance. That's what you're looking
right.
for.
Correct.
And you go from the sublime to the ridiculous as far as who has what. As far as nothing versus, you know, the responses.
It's totally, let me say this. Right. It's totally unacceptable in this day and age for any motorsports event to not have either an ambulance or a fire rescue vehicle or an and or a team, if it's a couple guys, whatever it is, an appropriate level for the amount of the event. The undue pain and suffering that drivers have to go through because, A, they may not have the proper equipment because, like you said, they're the bomber class or
I'm glad you said that,
something along
I'm
that line.
Touch on that one, really.
They may have a you know a little small extinguisher when they probably should have a little more, but that's all that's required by the series or the tech department. And I'm not
What do you think about somebody that drives with loose belts and open face helmet and plastic goggles? What do you think of that? What do you think? What do you think? Do you think he's safety conscious? What do you think?
It depends on what type of class car you're talking about and what type of event. I mean, go-karts ride with an open face helmet.
Go-karts, we're not talking about. We're talking about race cars. Stock cars.
Okay, a stock car.
What do you think of that? Tell me what you would think of somebody that climbed in a race car right now, today, with racing fuel, with an open face helmet. I would say that
it would be in their better interest to get a full face helmet.
But do you think it's his right to get in there like that?
Sure, if he wants to.
But Dale Earnhardt's dead because that's what he drove.
It's up to the series.
That's exactly what he drove.
It's up to the series to say, okay, just like we have the Hans device here, they finally stepped up to the plate and said, okay, enough of this crap. This is going to be mandatory. You're all going to wear this because too many of you are dying out there. And, you know, they're just – that's
– Well, the flip side of that, what you're talking about is we're talking about putting all responsibility back on the tracks and the track crews for the safety. That's only a part of it.
What's the other part of it?
Well, people have to take care of their own stuff. They have to take responsibility for their own actions to start with. But if you've got a guy that's running a powder puff or a bomber, you figure out what he's going to try and put together for a budget for safety for his team or for the car.
Crap.
So you want to take a grand.
And again, it's up to the tech department for that car to meet the recommendations or the rules, you know, the proper construction techniques,
right.
and not go shoddy on it. And that's where
a lot of these things happen. Because how many places do you go that the tech people in general do a lot of safety checks first part of the race? You know, we'll do different quarters through the race, through the season. I mean, what do they check this week? They check in belts, they check in seats. A lot of guys don't check much of anything. Halfway through the year, you might check the belts. And they're just going to check them for dates. They're not checking for mounting. They're not checking for a lot of things. Guys will run with driving suits with holes in their legs. And, some people I know at DeSoto a little while ago, they made a couple of guys that had problems with the uniforms. Look, you can't race here until you get your act together.
Right.
Now, the part of the problem with that is that if people aren't taking care of their own safety, that's primo number one. So you can't rely on the track crew and everybody else to take care of your own body.
Exactly. The number one person in charge of safety is the guy behind the wheel.
Exactly.
You can put together on a level, entry-level division for $1,000 or so, and I'm just using that for an off-the-cuff number, you can buy a reasonably priced seat. And I'm talking about a streeter or maybe even a bomber or whatever. Decent set of shoes, gloves, helmet, stuff like that. And as you go up, you know, a quarter to a third mile track, a quarter to a 3/8 mile track is going to give you roughly the same speed, especially with a 3,200-pound car, you back in the fence. The faster you go, it doesn't matter if you're going to have a bomber or a streeter, the impact speed is going to be higher. The safety equipment has to go up. And that's where a lot of people don't get this. And how many guys do you see out there, and women, that weigh 275, 300, 3.5, the cheapest seat that's out there with a single set of belts, and I was, where were we? DeSoto was it last year, year before that. We had somebody that was in a bomber that I was witnessing. We were sitting in the stands. Come to find out, seat had the girl weighed about 275. I'm going to be nice. I'm not naming any.
Pretty close.
All right, 275. Okay, I went over later on because I know the guy that had the car. I said, let me check, see what happened here. The seat was loose in the car. So, and the response was, I spared no expense on the safety equipment. So I said, okay, cool. I went back the next day when I could see what I was doing. The seat was loose in the car, not because it broke the mounts, but because it was bolted in the car with 3/4-inch bolts. I think he had 2 3/5/16 bolts in it. Okay?
Yeah.
One of them had fallen out. The other one was loose, so theoretically it was only two bolts holding the seat in the car. He was upset because the right hip on the seat broke out. The reason the right hip broke out was because, one, he didn't have the seat bolted in right. They had just gone to Wally World and picked up a motorcycle helmet the night before that was too big for her head. Okay? They put an old set of belts in it, which people get crazy about dates. SFI's mandates 2 years on recertification on belts. They're not giving you any leeway. It's 2 years.
There's a reason for that.
There's a reason for it, right.
Right.
Exactly. Nylon degrades with UV light. It degrades with, it's not really friendly with gasoline, et cetera. But I go looking in the car and trying to find out exactly what's happened with it. Crotch belt's missing. Totally missing out of the car. And people think, well, the crotch belt is an anti-sub belt to keep me from sliding down in the seat. That's not the reason a crotch belt is in the car. Crotch belt is in the car to hold the hip straps in place because the pelvis is what has to be restrained in the seat.
Right.
And that's when you keep the pelvis in place, that keeps the rest of the body in line from when you get wrecked. It was missing. So she came out of the seat, up into the air, broke the right side of the seat over the hip, so she had a nasty bruise there, caught the right side of her back on the seat, and went up, hit the roll bar, spun the helmet down on top of her head and came down, and wondered why she had a neck injury and was hurt. She looked, she didn't get killed. And that happens more frequently than people want to admit. So, and what happens is that because they didn't take care of business at the bottom end, now the track crew has to kick up their end because they got accelerated injuries because stuff that was not supposed to happen happened because they didn't take care of business. Because
the number one person.
So,
the driver.
So what happens is that lots of times the track crews and the track owners take on a bigger hit for track safety because people aren't taking care of the business on the bottom end, and you can buy the good stuff any way you want. You're not going out, shouldn't be going out there in keds, obviously.
Oh, no.
Why?
No, if you
don't know mix, I'm going to burn them off.
Well,
I don't want to cause a problem.
Number one, if you ever want to go out with a pair of mechanics gloves and a set of keds and an open face helmet, take a look at Leroy Porter. Yeah. Take a look at Leroy Porter and then think about it.
I was burning a gasoline fire doing a demo at a racetrack one day. And I know what I'm doing. The problem was I got a little complacent. I slipped up. I wasn't paying attention. Trying to show somebody what to do, and I got bit. I still got the scars to prove it.
And it'll bite you fast, too.
And what did we say before?
Right.
What is the number one thing that drivers are all terrified of?
Flames. Fire.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing
fire.
Else matters until that's under control.
Right.
But let me tell you right now, and everybody knows this. If you've got the right stuff on, the best guy protected out there is the guy that's in the car.
Exactly.
And these are the guys and drivers that are terrified the most. So why are we or track crew personnel running up to a driver who's in a car, who's fully protected, you know, if he's got his right stuff on, wearing shirts, wearing blue T-shirts, shorts, and keds with no gear, nothing. We're going to yank him out of the car. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Something that's not right with that picture.
Jack, you want to take a break?
Well, in the next 2 hours, that's what we're going to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Let's do it.
We got the crew here from DeSoto.
Yep.
So we'll bring them up.
We're going to talk to Mark Williams, who's the head of the ARCA safety team, and also Jeff Milges with Motorsports Rescue Association, and Greg Clark, of course, and Keith Grant.
Be there for the thunder and excitement of Super Late Model Racing. For the best racers in Florida, take off the High Bank three-quarter mile of USA International Speedway in the guaranteed concrete Florida Triple Crown. Round one for the Sunbelt Super Series Late Models comes your way on Saturday night, June the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Make your plans to be there. Tickets are on sale now. Call USA International Speedway at 1-800-984-7223 or check online at usaspeedway.com. The guaranteed concrete Florida Triple Crown at USA International Speedway. And you thought your weekends go fast.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847.
Evergreen.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stub. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stub?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper. That's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Stubmaster, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Tim Brink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to sprint car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
Well, we're safe as hell here.
We're back at
Real
the
Racing,
Snook River Grill.
Real Racing USA.
941-748-3490.
That's 941-748-3490. Jack, what's up, brother?
Today I got a call from...
Somebody called you?
This afternoon from Harold Grooms. He races modifieds over at Auburndale Speedway.
Right.
Well.
You know him?
Yeah. I know him well.
Yeah, he called me today to let me know about... this race that he created for October, October the 20th, he's created a race to honor his father, who raced for a long time, apparently at Auburndale Speedway.
Right.
It's a 100-lap modified race, open-wheel modified race, paying $5,000 to win.
Wow.
$300 guaranteed.
No. Wow.
And oh, October the 20th.
And what's the name of it?
It's the Harold
Crooms Memorial.
Memorial, I believe is 100. The name of it. He's going to be with us next week on Tuesday night's Real Racing USA show, along with the race director at Auburndale, the new race director, Ronnie Sims. And they're both, at this point, they're both scheduled to be here with us in the studio, so that should be interesting.
Awesome.
We got a big race coming up at DeSoto in June, the Richie Pop Storben Memorial.
Right.
$600 to win. And that's a pure stock race. Hopefully, I think I'm going to get a couple of his kids on next Tuesday. We'll slide them in. We got a show that's packed full next week already.
And Jack, there's another one.
And another one.
There's
the big one in July.
Actually, in November of 2004.
Oh, another race?
In November of 2004.
Right.
Sunshine Speedway was put to rest, and there are people racing all over the state of Florida still who have absolutely fond memories of that place. And we're going to have a reunion party here.
Oh boy!
At the Snook River Grill on July 24th.
July the 24th, the party will begin,
and it will run from 5 o'clock till 10. This restaurant's normally closed at 9 o'clock, but they've agreed if we pack the place, which I have no doubt we will. We expect somewhere between 100 and 200 people here. That's July the 24th.
And everybody is invited.
Yeah, and there will be a lot of announcements about that. Later.
Later? Continue
also,
to talk.
Also, Powermaster Motorsports
has
come on board to help us make all this possible. Powermaster's leader in high-performance OEM replacement alternators and starters for the automotive industry, obviously. And they have all kinds of specials on their website for racers.
Uh-huh.
It's powermastermotorsports.com, and we'll have some more about them later, too.
Cool.
Craig, I think we're going to talk to can you get Patrick Sheltra on the line? Patrick Sheltra is... This guy's pretty interesting. You know, he a lot of people know Patrick. He's been racing in dirt late models for a while. He finished. He was the 2004 Southern Extreme Dirt Car Series Rookie of the Year and the 2003 National Late Model Series Rookie of the Year. And he's known as Mr. Showtime. He's from Indiantown, Florida. But he started racing seriously in ARCA. He's run seven races this year so far. He's had one top ten, but he's like ninth in points, I believe. And yeah, as a matter of fact, Patrick's ninth in points right now. And he's on the phone with us. Hello, Patrick.
How you doing?
Where'd you get this name, Mr. Showtime?
Oh, well, we was racing dirt, you know, and no matter what, if we were running in the back or running up front, you know, we'd try to do our best to put on a show for all the fans.
Patrick, you're from Florida, right?
Yes, sir.
You know who the other Showtime guy is?
Who's that?
Yoho. You don't know Yoho, do you?
Yoho.
Robert Yoho.
Yes, sir.
You know Yoho?
Yeah, I know the Yohos, yes, sir.
Okay.
We're sorry to hear that, Patrick.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
So what's this adventure like in the ARCA deal? That's got to be a whole lot different than racing on dirt, man.
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm still racing the dirt and stuff, though, so it's a big change for me still, you know, because every weekend I'm racing dirt, so I got to change myself back over to asphalt. And the asphalt's totally different, you know. It's two totally different driving styles and stuff, you know. Dirt, you can get a little wild and crazy, and, you know, the car halfway catch it if you mess up, so... The asphalt, you know, you got to be real consistent, and you just got to use your head a little bit more.
Patrick, did you start racing here in Florida?
Yes, sir. I started racing at Volusia County Speedway.
The Big D.
In Daytona.
There you go. So what, you started in what, just regular, like, street stock or what?
Yeah, hobby stock. They call them hobby stock. It's the same thing as a street stock, you know,
right.
A Monte Carlo body and, you know, limited motors and stuff like that. But we stepped up the limited late model, and then we got in the super late model. Then we went to the Hooters Pro Cup for a little while, and then we stepped up into ARCA.
That ARCA, that's a big deal up there, man. Them guys are really – did you race Lakeland?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, that was one tough race right there.
Yeah, we went a lap down early there, and we had to find our way back up, and we got back on the lead lap, and was running fourth, and me and Justin Allgaier got together on the last lap a little bit there, going into three, and we looped her around there and ended up 11th, so it wasn't too bad.
That's unfair what them young kids did, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's for sure. But, you know, I've known Justin for a long time. We raced dirt together, so we're pretty cool.
So last Saturday you ran at Kentucky Speedway. Is that where you ran?
Yes.
All right, and finished ninth. Good run.
Yeah, we didn't have the best qualifying number there, so, you know, we went out a little early, and the sun was still pretty hot, and had a greasy track when we went out, so we ended up, I think, 21st or 23rd or something like that, and we had to play it out with pit strategy and had to move ourselves up through there a little ways.
Yeah, it says you qualified 23rd, and you finished ninth, man. That's earning your hard charger award.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, to come from that far in the back and run ninth, you know, in an ARCA race, I mean, there's so much stuff that can happen. I mean, it's just, you know, you got to keep your nose clean, keep the fenders all on it, and keep the wheels all connected there, and you'll have a good finish most of the time in an ARCA race.
But it's a lot better than last year. Last year you went up there and didn't even make the race, right?
Yeah, we towed a car in practice. So I've been there twice before I went there this time, and both of them wasn't the best.
Yeah, tough.
So I had a goal, you know, just to go there and get through the practice and get through qualifying and just make the lap.
So in the ARCA series, what is the most immediate goal?
My immediate goal is to make every race I go to, you know, try hard for the Rookie of the Year. And, you know, I want to end up somewhere in the top five in points at the end of the year.
So, Patrick, which one of these going to mean more to you? If you could win Eldora in your dirt career or to win the Rookie of the Year in ARCA, which is a bigger deal?
Well, I'd have to say ARCA, you know, because it's my first year doing it in full. And, you know, I'd like to do the rookie deal. But now to earn that Eldora win, now that right there would be another big deal to me, you know. But for right now, I'd have to set my sights on ARCA.
Yeah, winning that World 100 would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be the ticket right there.
Said on your website was patrickshelter.com. You have listed as Oglethorpe, Georgia, the Oglethorpe Speedway being your favorite track. Why is that?
To me, I mean, it's a racy track. You know, when you first get there, you know, you can always race on it. I mean, there's never one groove. I mean, there's always real good racing there. I mean, it's always a good race. Every time I went there, I mean, we probably hadn't run the best, but, you know, you can always race on the track. You know, it don't lock down, rubber up, and get one groove. I mean, it's just a real, real good track.
Patrick, what was it like going to Daytona to compete, even though you didn't make the race?
Right, yeah. It was a lot different, you know, than I expected. You know, everybody had me terrified of the place, you know. And when I got out there in the first lap, I made, you know, I'd never held my breath for so long. And, you know, I finally got around the first lap there. I'm like, whoa, I can finally relax. You know, I made it through the first lap here. So, I mean, it was a challenge to me. I mean, because I've never been on a track that big, and I didn't know what to expect. All I knew is what people told me. So it was a big, big difference for me. I mean, I'm used to running all these little short tracks on the dirt and stuff, and you get thrown out on, you know, a 2.5 mile track. I mean, that's huge.
What are the two? Where are the two venues where you race on dirt in ARCA? Is there? There's two of them, right?
What's that now?
There's
the two races in ARCA that is on dirt.
Yeah.
Should be Springfield, Illinois, and DeCoin, Illinois.
Right. Now you're gonna run those, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm running the full season this year.
Yeah, you feel you have an advantage going there?
I don't know if we have the advantage, but I know that on the dirt you can do a little bit more with the cars, you know, and you can catch them a little bit easier. And so yeah, I'd say you have a little advantage, but a lot of them other guys have been there, you know, and they've raced these cars on there.
So that's a whole different race car than a dirt late model, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, we weigh 2,300 pounds in a dirt late model, and you got a 3,400-pound car, you know. So it's going to be a big change, but I think we can handle it.
Basically a cup car on dirt.
Right, exactly.
Did you ever race? You raced against Jeff Choquette, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yep. Actually, he's probably about 45 minutes from my house. We live about 45 minutes apart.
Yeah, y'all probably raced over there at Thundercross.
At Thundercross in Okeechobee.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. Now, what he did was he made the move to asphalt in order to improve his ability to drive on dirt. That was the reasoning behind it.
That was the whole reason behind it. And then all of a sudden he decided he drove a lot better on asphalt.
He was so successful that he stayed with it. You haven't run the late model deal in Florida, have you?
No, I have not. The only thing I've ran on asphalt there is Hooters Cup cars and ARCA cars.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's fun watching you guys race that are dirt racers race on asphalt, because when you're coming off of turn two and turn four, you're doing things the other guys aren't doing.
Right, yeah. And, you know, the short track, that's where I think we do have the advantage, you know, because on the dirt track, you know, you can loosen the car up enough to go around the track and get faster by coming off, you know, a little sideways and stuff like that. And the guys that aren't used to doing that, you know, they don't like that feel. So, I mean, but I do feel like, you know, Jeff said about the dirt and the asphalt deal. I mean, it's helped me a lot on the slick dirt tracks. Because it gives you more throttle control. I mean, it teaches you a lot about them. So, I mean, I do understand where he's coming from there.
That's cool. When is your next race, Patrick?
It's weekend after Memorial Weekend. It's at Iowa Speedway.
Oh, boy.
That should be. Yeah.
Yeah, but this weekend, this Sunday, I'm headed to Eldora, so we got a Sunoco race there, so we'll head up there and hit that.
Is that National Late Model Dirt Series or?
It's a Sunoco series.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So, yep.
All right, man.
Go get some of Tony's money.
I hear that. I hear that.
Hey, he's got plenty.
We'll put a dent in him.
That's cool, man. Well, we wish you the best. Thanks for spending some time with us, and we'll check back with you later in the year.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks a lot, Patrick.
Patrick Sheltra.
He's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We can get back with him later in the year, maybe on our new show, Inside Florida Racing, and spend some...
Get him and Choquette on at the same time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I tell you, still to this day, I've never seen anybody come off turn four at New Smyrna like Jeff Choquette.
Wow.
Come off
DeSoto?
Sideways. Passing them guys, and they're going, what is Wayne Anderson's wondering?
We'll get
what
some
is
of our safety
doing? Guy
when we get some of the DeSoto safety guys up here, they sit right down there in turn four. Let them tell you about him and Schofield coming out of turn four together. And it's a sight to see. We all quit babbling between each other.
Well,
you want to go to a break?
Call our friend Terry Wall. We'll give Terry 3 minutes of fame here.
All right, give Terry three minutes of fame. Talk about women in racing. See what he thinks about Danica Patrick and Playboy.
This all don't get him started on that. Don't get this guy. That's,
3 minutes isn't enough. Man.
No, 3 minutes is not enough. And you know, on November, what was that date?
November.
You know,
November 2004.
McAuliffe. That's who it was.
Robbie McAuliffe.
He won the final race. It was actually Gulf Coast Modified Race, the last modified race
right.
at Sunshine Speedway, November 24th.
Robbie will definitely be here.
Okay, 3 minutes, and the clock is on now.
All right, Mr. Wall.
I can't say anything in 3 minutes. You know that.
What I want to know is, tell us about this NASCAR show you're going to do.
I'm going to do a NASCAR show that really exposes NASCAR for what they are.
Okay.
Dale Jr. fine. Don't you think NASCAR is really mad that Dale Jr.'s leaving DEI and they sort of up the fine and take away more points because of that?
Do you think that Dale Earnhardt and Tony Urie put them illegal brackets on that car on purpose just to piss off Teresa?
Maybe.
Yeah, because who's paying the fine? Yeah.
And what about... What about sponsors suing? What about the thing about why do they have the championship named after a corporate person, company, instead of named after a famous NASCAR person like Dale Earnhardt?
Well, the reason they do that is the bottom line of money. They're not really into honoring anybody. The bottom line for NASCAR is money. If you look down through their history, that just like in the small tracks that we know, Jack, that, you know, guys are really trying really hard to make it on a little bit of money. And NASCAR is just the opposite. They won't do anything unless the bottom line is padded.
And so so if you're going to do all this exposeing, how are you going to get guests on? They're not going to want to talk to you.
I think you should get Ray Everham's girlfriend on.
I think so, too.
Or the race car driver that sued him.
And I think I should get Jeff Gordon's ex-wife.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because Ray Everham's wife and Jeff Gordon's ex-wife have the same lawyer. And that would be an interesting conversation.
Because we damn sure find out who gets the money then, right?
So we're about somewhere between 2 weeks and 45 days away from this show beginning on Short Track America on Monday night, right, Terry?
On Monday night, and then Tuesday night, Short Track America, then Wednesday night, ASA Fast Lane, and then...
Inside Florida Racing on Thursday night.
Inside Florida Racing, that other show that I'm going to be doing, can we make that announcement yet or no?
Yeah, we were talking about it Saturday night after the races.
Saturday night after races, we'll talk to real racers from Short Track. People that actually love the race. Some of these drivers in NASCAR now love the money. And I don't think Dale Jr. is switching for the money. He's switching because he actually thinks that he'll never win a championship with DEI.
I'll tell you one thing about Terry Wall. You know, I once said, Terry's a big guy. Remember that time I said, they were bugging you about how big you were, and I said, if you want a big man to do it, you got to get a, if you want a, got a big job to do, you got to get a big man.
Yeah, that's why I talk about women in race cars.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you one thing. If Terry Wall, and I've been doing this 10 years, I've never seen anybody, met anybody who can pick up the phone and call anybody like Terry Wall can. He will call anybody anytime, any place.
Anybody. I will call even Rick.
The dog is back.
All right.
The dog is back.
All right, man. Listen, we're going to get into it. We got to let you go and get into this safety squabble we got going on here, and we will talk to you real soon, man.
Long as you have no women race car drivers, safety will be a lot easier.
Ooh. Talk to you later, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy. I'm sick and tired of
Hey, Tom.
A couple levels.
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
How do you find him the money? Tell me how you find him the money.
Well, actually, through a variety of means. But what we do is we provide the proposal for him, and we actually.
So what I'm saying is you guys don't actually find the money. Who finds the money? Who finds the money?
And really, we cultivate them.
Hey, Tom, who finds the money?
So we can get them a shot eventually.
Hey, Tom.
Bushy's car.
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
Who finds the money? Who in this game finds the money for these guys?
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to Sprint Car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
Be there for the thunder and excitement of Super Late Model Racing when the best racers in Florida take on the High Bank three-quarter mile of USA International Speedway in the guaranteed concrete Florida Triple Crown. Round one for the Sunbelt Super Series Late Models comes your way on Saturday night, June the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Make your plans to be there. Tickets are on sale now. Call USA International Speedway at 1-800-984-7223 or check online at usaspeedway.com. The guaranteed concrete Florida Triple Crown at USA International Speedway. And you thought your weekends go fast.
Hi, I'm Paulie Milam, driver of the number 42 sprint car at East Bay and TBARA. You're listening to Short Track America with Bill Green, Jack Smith, and Rick Angies.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stub. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stub?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper. That's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Stubmaster, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
We're here at the Snook River Grill on Real Racing USA, 941-748-3490.
Jack, I don't know why you tell them to give the phone number out every time somebody calls.
I don't
gang
want
up
nobody
on.
To call. It's part of the protocol.
Oh,
we're supposed to
the
do
protocol?
That. We do not want anybody to call us.
The protocol. But they ain't going
to
call anybody.
We don't want them to.
They won't.
I have to give out the number.
We challenge them. They won't.
Jack, take
other
the money
shows
and
try and give tickets away. They won't call.
Real Racing USA.
Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East.
We got some guests in the here with us tonight, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We have the guys, the safety guys from DeSoto Super Speedway. We have
Tim.
Tim.
Rob.
And Ryan.
There's another right. microphone there, guys.
It's on.
Don't
okay,
be
guys,
bashful. Tell us.
Hold it close and tenderly.
So tell us a little about you guys and what you do out there at the Speedway.
We try to keep people from getting hurt, or basically to prevent anything that would accelerate into anything worse. A bad wreck, we go over, are you okay? They give us the wave, yeah, I'm fine. You know, we go back, we see a little oil fire or a little fire under the hood, we go over there, we put it out. Sometimes it excels into a little more, but that's our main job is to make sure everybody's okay. Also, we run into the stands if somebody gets hurt in the stands, or, you know, I remember a few weeks ago we had a cardiac arrest, or not a cardiac arrest, but chest pains that could have went worse, but we had the ambulance service come out. So
now in your particular situation, you're doing both. You're doing EMS and fire rescue for the track itself?
Correct.
So you have, what, a couple, two guys on each, or... I mean, like, what's your normal crew on a
right,
Saturday
right
night?
Right now, our crew is three, one on the ambulance and two on the fire truck.
Okay, so that you all pretty much converge together if there's
right,
an incident going on.
Right. All of us are trained to do both. One guy will run the ambulance. Basically, if something's bad, both vehicles are going to respond anyway. Mm-hmm. So once we get the patient, if there is a patient, on the ambulance, one will go back with the fire truck, and we'll take the other and rendezvous with Manatee EMS.
You guys sit down. I'm a little biased because we used to work there for many years, so I'm familiar with it. You still sit on the infield, or do you guys?
No, we sit on the infield.
So tell the fans what that's like with cars screaming around you at 80 miles an hour, coming across the middle of the infield and saying, yeah.
Well, there's been some close calls where they're kind of coming at you, and you run and leave your stuff.
You got about 50 guys in an enduro race on New Year's.
Is your mic on?
Go ahead.
About 50 guys in an enduro race on New Year's, and the lights turn off at the track, and they're all tearing around.
That's
in
a thrill. That's
a good
damn
feeling
thrill.
Right there.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you just curl up in a little ball.
You're standing up there with a microphone and talking away and yelling and screaming, and the lights go off and the power goes off, and you only hear yourself.
Yeah, that's
it.
And you hear bam. Bam, 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 bam.
No, it's not good.
And a couple of screams.
Yeah. The screams are ugly.
Like what we were talking earlier, the driver is usually the one who is the most important person to either have good equipment in the car to make your job easier.
Right.
Or if they...
Were any of you guys working there the night that he was talking about Susan
yes,
Bass?
I was.
You were working there.
Yes.
I thought you were. Because I was announcing the race, and when she got in that wreck, it looked like her head came off in the car.
It did.
Because, I mean, it literally looked like her head came off in the car because her helmet was so loose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so important that the safety crew works with the tech department in ensuring, you know, that they do go through the cars, make sure the fuel cells are right, the belts are right,
right.
You know, they have a fire extinguisher. And then, like, you have the Hans device in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagine you probably don't see too many guys, or how many you have out there running some kind of a head and neck restraint?
The only ones that I've seen out there are usually the super late models, some limited late models, but
a couple of the open wheel guys.
A couple of the open wheel guys.
Not a lot of them.
No,
really? No, not a lot of them.
Are you kidding me?
No. Most of the sprint car guys will run a Hutchinson.
Hutchinson.
The strap.
Hutchinson.
Because that's
They run some.
Some, but some of them don't go. No, they don't have nothing.
Some of them have neck rings.
Yeah. They wear the old style neck ring, the majority of them.
And all that proves is insanity
breeds
where
insanity.
You find it.
Insanity breeds insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're talking, you know, getting.
It's the invincible factor.
Oh, the. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
It ain't happening to me. That's what hurts most people on a race track.
See, I have the opposite problem. That's why I could never get in a race car.
Yeah, you're scared shitless.
Yeah, everything.
How about off the racetrack? You guys ever have to respond into the pit area for situations?
Yes.
Tell us some of those.
We go into the stands sometimes. We'll get a call. Kid fell off the bleachers or fell down the bleachers or something like that. Like I said, we had one that had chest pains, and she was all the way up in the top by the tower. Mm. So it's in the pits.
Slices
somebody will
fall and
out their trailer or, yeah. you know, cut themselves yeah. under their car working.
How about
the
how
fights.
About some of the hazards yeah. in the pits?
Drivers.
No comment.
No, I'm saying, like, there's a large quantity of fuel because everybody has dump cans or you
yes.
know, 20 gallons of gas in each,
yes.
each vehicle.
Whenever they have the hot pits out in the infield, we go by, especially the ones that have gas, and make sure they have fire extinguishers. And if they don't, hey, you mind going back to get one? Because when that goes, you know.
Right, so you're taking a proactive approach
right,
and telling
right.
the drivers, look, you know, for your own benefit.
Well, they're pit crew. We're telling them, look, a fire extinguisher, you need it.
And you're helping yourself because in that situation where they wouldn't have it,
right.
now you have an extra tool in your box
right.
to help the situation, especially if it's a, you know, a large fuel
fire. Right. What are you guys' qualifications?
Firefighter EMT.
He is a EMT. Yeah, I'm an EMT and a firefighter.
EMT and a firefighter.
Rob, what's the biggest challenge that you guys face as a team?
Our biggest challenge, and I don't want to make anybody mad, but it's actually getting cooperation from the driver. You know, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And then next thing you know, you have to go in the pits
Well, we had, what was it, that, I forget who it was.
Wait a minute. Drivers are cooperative. What are you talking about?
We had a guy who got lost. We had a guy who got lost after he went over the hill. He went over the hill and he didn't know where he was parked.
When a driver is a high impact, hard impact hit, okay?
Right.
Don't you have, like, the driver would just, I mean, this is what you do. This may sound stupid, but this is. I think about this all the time. When a guy hits the wall at 70 miles an hour or 80 miles an hour, and he's got the crap knocked out of him, okay, it would seem to me obvious that the guy, he's got adrenaline going 4,000 miles an hour.
Right.
He is not the guy, it would seem to me, he is not the guy to make the decision on whether he's okay or not.
Right.
It would seem like that's your guy's decision to make.
Unfortunately, whenever we get over there and say, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And then this,
and what's
blah, blah,
and what's
blah,
the
blah,
next
blah,
thing
blah,
they
blah.
Say? How's the car?
Yeah.
How's the
or
car?
No. Look, we're going to have to cut you out of your car. Don't cut my car. And then they start climbing
and
out.
And that's where the driver
cooperation
comes in.
That's where the driver cooperation comes in. Not only that, the like you said, the adrenaline. Sometimes they got knocked into the wall. They're mad. They come out. They're angry. And we're trying to deal with them. Unfortunately, we're not cops. So we can't wrestle them down and say, you need care.
Well, and you know, there's a point. It comes to a point where either this guy's going to get treated or, you know, he's refusing treatment.
That's exactly right.
At which point, like on the streets, you'd get him to sign an AMA or whatever. The same thing here. You have to allow the series to work with you or the track and say, okay, we're going to make it mandatory that until our medical personnel check out the driver, they're not going anywhere.
At least let me know where you're at, what day it is, little things like that. If you can answer those questions and you don't want any treatment, fine, you can go. But, you know, trying to wrestle with us and get away from us, you know.
I go out on the track when we have something serious happen. I go right out on the track because part of my job is letting the fans know what's happening, And, you know, and everybody cares about these guys out there. Some of them, you know, you might hate them while they're racing, but when they're injured or they're not moving out there or something, everybody cares in one way or another. So I go out there, and these guys are, I mean, they're right in the car with them. You know, they're saying, you know, you okay? What day is it? Who's the president? You know, and majority of them are, you know, responsive, and they'll sit still. And if they're hurt, they're not going anywhere. But then there are the few that just fly out of the car.
Well, that may not be a good.
I've seen them get out of the car with a broken leg.
Well, the perfect example was that incident we were talking about that you guys have been talking about earlier. She refused treatment.
Susan, yeah.
And then we had to go into the pit and check her out.
Yeah, and I don't remember what that one guy was racing though. That he got the nail knocked out of him. I don't know if you were there, and I'm pretty sure you were there. Yeah. The guy who went into the pits and didn't know where he was at.
Yeah, he wrecked his car pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, we gave him the runaround. He wanted to, it's different, too, depending on if the track's under red or if it's under yellow or how many cars there are or what's going on. You know, we gave him the questions. He was all right. He wanted to go
and
back.
And see, a lot of the short tracks, you know, you're at the mercy of
the
either
drivers.
The track promoter saying, okay,
right.
well, you
yeah.
know, if the driver says he's okay, we'll let him
he's
go.
He's fine.
Or if it's a series, you know, we right. have the advantage that, and the larger series have an advantage where we tell them, look, you're not cleared until mm-hmm. you're cleared by our physician or, you know, the medical personnel.
Right.
You guys got a tough job.
We do. It's different.
You're
yeah.
the man in the middle here.
We got people above
Unfortunately,
you trying to
we
run
are.
Things, yeah. and we're trying to do it as we do it
we're
on
just,
the street.
We're trying to do our job like we would on the street, and it, you know, it gets conflicting.
Now, Craig, that's something else that you brought up. These guys are all certified. They're EMTs.
Mm-hmm.
Rob's a firefighter. But it, and you guys might agree with this, it's a whole different world on a racetrack.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Than an accident out
on
the interstate.
Is. Number one, you don't have high-octane fuel, or with the wing sprints, a fuel that you can't see burn.
Clear burning.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's... Yeah, it is fun.
Specialized seats and restraints and devices like this.
Right.
Into their car on the street.
We've got all kinds of different vehicles, and if we had a diagram of each one, it would be great because everyone is designed different.
Would you like to see, and this is a real touchy subject, but would you like to see regulation in terms of state?
On what?
On the safety requirements at racetracks.
Well... my hobby is drag racing. I drag race, and it's totally different than circle track, but they are very strict on what we do. They put us through tech before and after an event, or before we even
safety-wise.
Get cleared. Safety-wise.
I watched him do that up in North Carolina.
Safety-wise, they check our equipment, they check us, they check everything.
Right.
And then after we finish, they go back and check everything again.
Right.
And if it fails, we lose.
And that doesn't happen at stock cars tracks mostly.
Mostly. Some tracks are different. It all depends on how strict the tech guys are.
Yeah.
You know, it's all how the rules are. I think it's – I don't know if there is a sanction where, like in drag racing, it's NHRA or IHRA. I don't know if there's many different sanctioning bodies that could enforce safety equipment or anything like that.
There are, and you know, SFI, the National
right
Organization, Safety Foundation International,
right,
and like in our series and you know in NHRA at this track, safety is very is taken very seriously. And that's why the tech is intense the way it is.
Well, these guys take it very seriously,
too. Oh, yeah. No, definitely.
Right.
But
I don't think overall, it's, from what I've seen, generally speaking,
your mic's on.
Overall at the racetrack, stock car tracks, I don't think there's as much intensity overall.
Emphasis.
It's emphasis on it.
Right.
It's always an emphasis
right.
with you guys, the guys who do
right,
your job
exactly.
at a track. You're always taking it seriously. Otherwise, you wouldn't be there.
Exactly.
It's what you breathe and live about.
Well, and
but
it gets,
overall.
It gets back to having a series, the size of the series, too. Maybe, you know, and some small series are very intent on safety also. I mean, they really tech their cars
yeah.
right.
well. But just an ordinary short track on a Saturday night may not have a series
right.
or be part of it. Some tracks, there's no standard
right.
by which all tracks can be judged across the country, and that's I think that was the thrust of that question.
It would help. It's just a matter of actually getting a tech guide besides just weighing a car, you know, to go through, make sure the seat doesn't wobble or anything like that, any small thing. Make sure there's no jagged ends on the cage or make sure the batteries.
It comes down to education, too.
Yeah,
it's educating, you know, everybody's on the same page. And
right.
But you have to start with a standard
right.
that everybody can follow. And that's what we're lacking in a lot of areas or tracks around the country.
Go ahead, Keith.
Stafford Springs, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Where?
Stafford Springs, Connecticut.
Okay.
Up Stafford north. Motor Speedway.
That's up north.
John Birdie Land.
Still in the country, though, so it's still part of the deal.
Okay.
The Department of Motor Vehicles oversees racing safety in the state.
Jersey, too, don't they?
I believe it's Jersey, too.
How many race tracks are in Connecticut?
What's that?
How many stock car tracks are in Connecticut?
There's
deja vu all over again.
Probably half a dozen right now. Maybe
three.
Five.
There's three. According to John Birdie.
Yeah. Right.
And there was a lot more.
And what do they do when a wreck occurs?
No, there was a lot more before the Department of Safety took over.
Right. And what
happened was what I said at the beginning.
That was the argument that you guys were having earlier.
They get real, real intense to a point where they actually step in and they'll oversee the promoter and the track and the series and everybody else, and basically you guys are out of the picture.
That was what I was asking Rob about if from your perspective you guys would like to see more regulation. That's what I was referring to.
Well, as a state law, probably not, because that just brings more headache into already what you've got.
Yeah.
And it goes both ways, like we were talking. It can go too much, it can go not
What
enough.
It boils down to is what Keith said. The driver, the guy who's putting his ass in the seat. I mean, and unfortunately, we've seen it, Jack, from one end to the other, where we've said, well, don't race there if you don't like it.
No.
Well, here's one.
The only way we've ever gotten anywhere getting that point across was there was a point about 8 years ago, 7, 8 years ago, where we said, okay, let's bring the wives and the girlfriends into it.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
and
then
we started getting something.
Right.
Because you can't, and it makes sense, you can't expect, I mean, if the guy's going to be, the guy who's going out and racing in a stock car track or in a drag racing situation, you can't expect this guy at the moment that he's going out to compete to be thinking about that. He can't be thinking about getting hurt and all that stuff. I mean, otherwise
he can't afford to think. Here's a quick
solution that happened when we were running the Bushnell series. Okay, basically the bottom line is enforce the rules you put in place. If you put in a set of rules and regulations for different
enforce
things, nobody even checks 90% of the stuff that's there. Okay. And once in a while, if it's there, well, we might check it. When I was running as a crew member on a Bush North team, we had a checklist. Every week we went to a track, they checked something different every week, whether it be belts, whether it be seats, whether it be head and neck, whether it be radios or window net, something like that. And everybody got checked on the same deal. But what that did was make everybody get all this stuff together and have everything on their game every single week, because you never knew what they were going to check.
That's
but
what it should be at every
the
track.
Page.
They should. They
it
should,
isn't hard.
They should have one thing in safety that they check every week.
It's not hard.
You know, and but every car doesn't go through tech every week, and that's every racetrack.
They would have
every racetrack.
They had the safety inspectors that would walk around through the series or through the division, and they would actually just go from car to car and check stuff out.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Hang tight. Who we got coming up?
We'll come back with Jeff Milges and Mark Williams from the ARCA safety team.
All right.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen. I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. Hey, Tom.
A couple levels.
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
How do you find him the money? Tell me how you find him the money.
Through a variety of means, but what we do is we provide the proposal for him, and we actually.
So what I'm saying is you guys don't actually find the money. Who finds the money? Who finds the money?
And really, we cultivate them.
Hey, Tom, who finds the money?
So we can get them a shot eventually.
Hey, Tom.
Bushy's car.
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
Who finds the money? Who in this game finds the money for these guys?
Be there for the thunder and excitement of Super Late Model Racing when the best racers in Florida take on the High Bank three-quarter mile of USA International Speedway in the Guaranteed Concrete Florida Triple Crown. Round one for the Sunbelt Super Series Late Models comes your way on Saturday night, June the 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Make your plans to be there. Tickets are on sale now. Call USA International Speedway at 1-800-984-7223 or check online at usaspeedway.com. The Guaranteed Concrete Florida Triple Crown at USA International Speedway. And you thought your weekends go fast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jefferson, driver of the number 1 open wheel modified and number 94 super late model. And you are listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Jack, all night long, I've been playing that money deal where you're asking, Tim Clark is his name? Is that his name, Tim?
I don't remember.
And, he never did come up with where the money came from. What is that? Tell everybody what that is.
Well, it's a little more than just happens to be that I like John Lennon.
John Lennon, too.
Yeah, the deal is that later on, sometime here this summer, the next few weeks probably, we have a show that we're going to do on Real Racing USA.
It might end up putting us off the air.
It might, because a lot of shows we do might, from time to time, piss somebody off, and this one might really piss somebody off.
Well, one time or another during every show.
What are you talking about? Sometimes it's important to talk about subjects that are a little hard to talk about. The dark side of driver development, because not everybody out there is working in the best interests of the young kids that they're getting into the driver development teams. There are some scams. There's some really good people, but there's also some people that are just into taking money from people who have a dream, and we're going to cover and delve into that a little bit. And right now, we'll just turn it back over to Craig Clark, Chief Craig Clark. Let's do it.
And we have on the phone right now a good friend of mine and a really great guy, and the head of the ARCA safety team, Mark Williams, or the ARCA Hardcore Safety Initiative. Does that sound better?
That sounds good, Craig.
How you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good. We've been talking about safety all night long, and tell us a little bit about what you do with the series and how did the Hardcore Safety Initiative start?
Well, my position is I oversee all the safety, whether it be our touring divisions of the ARCA RE/MAX series or the ARCA Lincoln Welders Truck series, as well as the two short tracks that we own and operate, one at Flat Rock, Michigan, and one in Toledo, Ohio. And when I say all safety, that's the track crews, that's the track itself, the safety of it, as well as the cars themselves, the driver's uniforms, and their personal safety equipment.
Mm-hmm.
The Hardcore Motorsport Safety Initiative started about 3 years ago, actually. We were looking for a sponsor to try to take the next step in responsibility and safety to our teams and our drivers, and we started going out looking, and one of our car owners, a guy by the name of Bill Wells, owns a high-performance shop here in Michigan, and it's called Hardcore Motorsports. He owns also one of our Remax teams, the 08 car. Started talking to him at DeCoin, Illinois, and one thing led to another, and threw out and asked him if he knew anybody who'd be interested in sponsoring it, and lo and behold, he did. So he and his partner, E.B. Richardson, sat down with us, and we put a plan together, and ARCA Hardcore Safety Initiative was born.
And what started the need to have the safety team? This is what we've been talking about all night long. Was it because there was a lack of safety at tracks that you went to with the series?
Well, ours is a little different than a true safety team. Let's start with that. And it wasn't because of a lack of safety. It was just that, you know, when you operate a small track especially, and then in our case we go to bigger tracks all the way up to Talladega, we weren't getting the same level of safety all the way across the board. So this safety initiative allows us to do continuing education training for tracks and their safety people, and educate them on the touring series and the stuff that we kind of, won't say require, probably more request, but would like to have. We do send a safety vehicle to every event, whether it be the Lincoln Truck Series or the Remax Series, has a safety person that goes at all times, and they're responsible starting out with the car and driver safety equipment. And then from there, the track safety and working on what they're doing. And we're just trying to take that next step in responsibility. And having somebody at each one of the touring events, that same crew or the same people, the drivers get very comfortable. So in the event that we do have a bad incident, you know, they're seeing the same people, and those people know them all the time.
How much easier does it make your job being that you're sponsored?
It makes it a lot easier, actually, because now we actually have the funding to be able to get equipment that we need, to be able to do training on the road for other tracks and other facilities, and it actually has allowed us to hire a full-time position. Up until January of last year, of 06, my position was part-time. So we hired a full-time position out of it and two part-time positions. So it's benefited us greatly.
And does it make you more attractive to tracks, you coming in, because they don't actually have to pay you that huge amount of money?
I don't know that it ever really makes us more attractive, because we still use the track safety equipment everywhere we go. We don't, with the exception of Flat Rock and Toledo, we use our own, but they're part of our team. So we don't come in and take over. We're not trying to take over. We don't want to take over. We want to be more like the liaison between the track safety people and the series that we go in with. It just makes it a lot easier, and we work a lot with the different tracks and helping them upgrade their facility as well as their safety workers.
Hey, Mark, how important do you think it is, or do you think it is important, that there is some type of national safety standard for all tracks across the country?
I believe wholeheartedly in NFPA 610. And it is a standard that's out there that is for motorsports right now. And I think it's a great thing. I think that, you know, it's a work in progress like any other standard is, but I think it's a wonderful thing, because what it's also done is it's brought super speedway racing and short track racing more and more together, because they all have to do the same thing.
And for the fans, we need to clarify something, that when we say a standard, it, right now those are guidelines from the National Fire Protection Association. They put a lot of energy and work into creating the guidelines. It's up to the local jurisdictions to take it from there and turn it into any type of regulation.
And some are right now.
And right, and some states have taken that based on 610 and made a local guideline, a state guideline, you know, county guideline. And, you know, that was a debatable topic we were talking about earlier, that by regulation that it's going to run the cost up, and that the little short track Saturday night, the fans aren't going to be able to afford to come there because the track's going to have all of this extra, you know, coverage.
Realistically, I don't think it's going to be that far. You know, I've worked 25 years in the fire service and retired as the fire marshal, so I have a little bit of knowledge on standards and rules and inspections and things like that. And if once they do the initial hit of stuff that it's asking for them to do, most of it is stuff they're already doing. Now it just has them and shows them how to format it.
Right, education.
I don't think it's costing the short track. We do it, and quite honestly, we've done it for 5 years now at our two short tracks, even before the local jurisdiction picked up on it.
And it gets down to having training, too, you know, based on those guidelines, which we're going to get with our next guest about, that it's important for the guys at the local level as well as the national level to come to some common ground. This is the accepted way to do this across the country.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a right step for all of us. I really do. And the other thing it does is it puts the sanctioning bodies on an equal playing field or a level playing field with the tracks and the promoters. So they all know kind of what they're expected of each other.
And as we know, the insurance company pretty much drives, you know, the industry based on experience, what has happened, and how they do their experience mods, and you know, with their underwriting department.
Yeah, they do. You know, and has motorsports changed? It's changed greatly. We all know it. The biggest change has happened since Earnhardt's fatal crash in Daytona. And has it changed on the safety worker? Well, yeah, it has. You know, I can remember back a long time ago working in a short track in a t-shirt and a pair of jeans, and now, you know, it's fire suits and helmets and gloves it has cost some money, but the flip side of the coin is it was needed.
Well, it definitely needed. And you know, part of that is we're talking the, you know, government getting involved, and you know, you can only look at the first time in history that a track was involved with an OSHA event, and it's right here in Florida.
Yeah, it was.
And Mark Jack Smith here. One of the things that I've seen, and there is younger, the drivers just keep getting younger and younger. And, I mean, I know the major series, such as the one you work with, you have age limits and so forth, but there's so many young drivers, and the thing that I've said this to many people is like, that alone, if nothing else, just that alone has got to make the track promoters and series operators more conscious of safety, because of the negative publicity. If you have, it's one thing if a 40, I mean, this might sound crass, but it's one thing for a 40-year-old man to get hurt in a race car. It's another for a 16-year-old kid to get severely injured. In terms of the public, is that something you guys look at?
We don't, Jake. We don't look at it. I guess you could say directly, because we treat all of our drivers with the same regard. By the way, yes, kids are getting younger, but the flip side is we are getting older. Just so I'm clear on that. But we look at it. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. We're going to look at it a little bit more. The biggest thing is now, and the head and neck strain is a prime example. You know, our biggest challenge was putting that experienced driver in a head and neck strain. The kids were already wearing them. They were wearing them, and they're even bad an eye when you ask them to see their equipment. The other guys, you know, they'll try to, well, you know, I got this device, or I want to see it. And I think, all in all, yeah, we take it a little harder when it's a kid. And when I say kid, anymore to me, at 25 and below is a kid.
Yep.
But, you know, we take it as a challenge of protecting all of our drivers. age doesn't even factor in at this point. And we've got some very talented people on both ends of the spectrum.
All right, Mark. I think we've covered a lot of the important points that we were hitting on. That somewhere down the line, either it's the state, local jurisdiction, somebody is going to have to step in. You know, with this first precedent-setting case, which was involving OSHA, and again, you know, OSHA is here for the protection of workers in general across the United States. And, you know, they did find violations that have been corrected, you know, fines were paid, but it's the first one. Other tracks, even, you know, that was a larger track. The smaller ones have to look out, too, because it's going to happen at some point.
They certainly do, Craig. They really do. And we've taken, with our two short tracks, we have started taking steps to hopefully ensure that if we ever have an incident and OSHA comes in on a fact-finding tour, that we are protected. We've got plans right now in place. We're already working on things like the hearing protection. We've gone to, even on the touring series, it used to be, during the morning meeting with the officials, the president of the company would say, okay, when the motors fire up, I'd like you to put your headsets on. Now it's, when the motors fire up, you have to put your headsets on.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff that OSHA is going to come in and look at, we've always taken for granted. It's not something that's going to usually, in most cases, cost us a bunch of money. It's mostly going to just be stuff that we take for granted, putting headsets on to protect our ears. You know, having certain things around our fuel depots and things like that. It's not... They went after the big stuff, you know, and we all know where it was in Florida. They went after them because they had a very serious issue and a very serious incident. And I know from fact, and I've talked with friends of mine there, and they know. I mean, they've told me they were there 6 months.
Oh yeah, I'm looking here. I've got all their fines right in front of me here. I've got a whole booklet full, but. Well, Mark, it was a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully we'll catch you out on the road. If not, we'll see you, I'm sure, before Lakeland.
Well, I hope so. if I can do anything else for you, just by all means, let me know.
And we'll keep good thoughts for your family.
I appreciate that. I really do.
We can't wait for you to come back to Florida.
I'm telling you.
Well, I'm not going to come back till the winter because it's too hot down there.
There you go.
All right, Mark.
You got to remember, I live in Michigan.
That's right.
The reason I live up here, I like cold weather.
I'll be up there in a month or so. I'll give you a call.
Where are you going to be?
We're in Martin, over by Grand Rapids and Milan.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
When are you in Milan?
I don't have it right in front of me. I believe August.
Email is a wonderful thing,
yeah,
Craig.
Yeah, I'll email you.
Because, quite honestly, Craig, my house to Milan Dragway is exactly 9 miles.
All right, I'll give you a call. Hey, thanks for being on here tonight, Mark.
I appreciate it, guys. All right. Anything we can do for you, let me know.
Take it easy.
All right. Bye.
You know, you're talking about OSHA regulating stuff. Now, are you just talking about OSHA regulating track workers and stuff, or the guys on the track, or the race car drivers? Or
well,
what?
They cover...
What about guys that stand in front of a pitcher throwing a 90-mile-an-hour fastball at them? They have no protection.
Well, this isn't speculation. This is what they did.
They actually nailed
Daytona.
Right. Well, that's safety.
Craig, why don't you introduce our next guest? Yeah. Let's forget the break. We'll do that later.
Here with us also, keeping on the safety vein here, is Jeff Milges. He's the VP of Motorsports Rescue Association. And does – which tracks do you do?
Work circle tracks, drag strips, Indy cars, off-road. Offshore.
Okay, and you also have a program where you teach people.
Right.
And tell us about that.
We teach students how to operate safely at a track. It's a 16-hour course. It meets the outline of NFPA 610, and it also is approved by SFI for drag incidents response.
Okay, and you have this program because... there wasn't any other programs on any level, and because of 610. 610 started after Earnhardt's incident years back, and everybody said, you know, from the big level down to the small track level, that, you know, we need to have something.
Right. There wasn't anything even before 610. About 5 or 6 years ago, we had a death at one of our tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And the safety team was subpar, to say the least. And at that time, I was working for American Medical Response Ambulance Service, and we provided the on-track EMS.
Mm-hmm.
But we were just wearing nylon, you know, cotton shirts and EMS jumpsuits, things like that. And we went looking for a program to teach us about motorsports rescue.
Now, when you say subpar, it was that the guys didn't know that what they were doing from being out on the streets or whatever. It's just they didn't know specifically for racing probably what to do at that point.
At that point, that's correct. You know, I started off as a volunteer firefighter mm-hmm. before I became paid, and I understand, but there are staffing issues with volunteers. And that night that we had the death, we had a staffing issue where mm-hmm. a couple decide, well, I can't work any longer, I got to go home. So the professional level that they're trained to is one thing, but at that time, I was a fire instructor, and I thought I knew everything about firefighting and race rescue and whatever. I didn't know anything, really, when it came down to it. It would be like putting a structural firefighter at an airport and telling him to, you know, deal with this 747 on fire.
Right. It's basically the same thing. It's a fire. You know to put the wet stuff on the hot stuff, but there's different tactics, strategies,
correct.
And ways to deal with that. And a rolling fuel fire as opposed to a, you know, structure fire
right.
or a car fire with a car in the streets, totally different than a race car.
Correct.
Different fuels and things of that nature.
Jeff,
yes, Jack.
Jeff, these my friend Craig's always throwing these things around, and I have to decipher them. You're talking about 610 and 425 and 330.
420? What's up?
and I know you're talking about. I know you're talking about regulations and things like that that are proposed by different agencies. But do the promoters of the tracks and you and Craig, whatever you guys want to answer this, but do the promoters?
First off,
what
is 610?
These things?
No.
What is 610?
I explained it earlier, but I'll tell you again. It's guidelines from the National Fire Protection Association, which is the same organization which puts down guidelines for firefighters, fire departments, for this building we're in.
Life safety.
For the life safety. For the sprinkler system, you know, the fire alarm system, construction. Yeah, they have.
I read so much of it, I got blurry-eyed about 4 or 5 years ago. At your insistence,
right? Yeah. Right. And 610 is a
so
very.
So the answer is no, is what you're saying, Jeff.
They're not well aware of it. It's going to be a reality wake up call for them.
How
some,
so?
Some are in denial, though.
Some are always in denial.
They don't want to deal with it because at times it can be confusing if they never if they've never dealt with this before.
Well, it is very confusing,
right?
Sure.
But if you start with the beginning, it lays out the groundwork to start a plan, and you work through the rest of it. The SFI, getting back to the NFPA question,
right?
SFI is to racing what NFPA is to the General Fire Service, EMS, and the rest of the industry.
Uh huh.
Right.
So that's why the two have come together, and like Jeff and Craig were talking about.
Right. The difference is SFI writes the standards for the equipment. You know, this belts are SFI certified. They it was a spinoff from SEMA originally, and the whole history there, but.
More and more of the municipal areas have had to get involved with racetrack wrecks and responses a lot due to 9/11. Sorry, I got to
get that right.
There. But then again, bringing in 9/11, obviously you got terrorism problems coming up. Now you've got venues of motorsports events that have a lot of people involved.
Right.
You've got mass casualty problems. All these things have evolved over the past years. And that's just one of the last things to kick it up. So everybody's had to kick up a notch.
Do you think, Craig, that it can get
crazy at times?
The more like a local EMS has to respond to a racetrack, the more attention it's going to get to the 610 and SFI and all this stuff.
I think as incidents change, it's important that a local track has a good working relationship with their local fire district. Fire department, EMS, if it's a county, city, et cetera. Some do, and a lot of them don't, unfortunately. I go to tracks all the time, Well, okay, we're in this district, but, you know, we're from three districts away because the track owner can't get along with the fire chief or this guy, so they have to go out of their area to bring somebody in, or they've had a bad incident in the past, or et cetera.
Jeff, that brings up another question, Jeff. I'll throw your way. I was up at Watermelon Capital Speedway, and I just called up there yesterday to make sure what I exactly had my facts straight because I thought this is the way it was. They couldn't even start their races until we had to wait a little bit for the ASA race to begin because they had to have the county ambulance has to be there at the owner's insistence, the owner being, I forget his first name, it's Mr. Reagan, his nephew races in the cup. But
applaud that.
Yeah, he makes it mandatory that the ambulance is there on scene. It's a county ambulance. They couldn't start. Now, a lot of times we hear that, you know, tracks don't have ambulances for one reason or another, and some just absolutely insist that it's not needed. What are your thoughts on it being in this business?
Well, it's a stepping stone. Having an ambulance and an EMS crew is a great thing to have. But unless they're trained in motorsports rescue, that they understand the mechanism of injury that the driver is suffering or that's occurring to him, and what injuries to look for, they're still at a disadvantage. If they don't have protective gear, they can't come into that, let's say, a 50-foot radius, which is a danger radius because of a flash fire. You don't want to be, obviously, working around a car and have a flash fire and you're wearing just an EMS, you know, cotton jumpsuit or short-sleeve shirt or a T-shirt.
So it's not necessarily... Are you saying then that it's not absolutely a necessity, or
having an ambulance on scene is a necessity?
Okay.
It should go a couple of steps further that you should have people that are trained in motorsports rescue available, including the EMS crew, and they should take part. EMS agencies should take part in any training that you offer at your track, so you're all
coordinated. Which gets back to being connected to the local jurisdiction is very important because they're going to be the same ones that are doing the inspection on your facility in the first place.
So Craig, what is your thoughts on the importance of having an ambulance on scene?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, what about the arguments that there's one down the street.
Oh, we can dispatch it. It'll only be here in 5 minutes. Yeah, if it's in the district.
Right.
If now, it's Craig, not on a call way out in the middle of
Craig,
nowhere.
Craig, when you worked at DeSoto, we had a county ambulance that couldn't transport.
True. Yep.
Same thing.
Right.
Could not transport.
The difference is the county was all under the same medical direction.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, there are private services out
still
there.
Still had to wait. Yeah.
But they can dispatch a chopper.
Uh-huh.
Private ones have to go through a lot bigger ordeal to get to life.
Hand Rob the microphone. Rob, what is your how does that work with you?
Whenever I need an ambulance?
Say you needed a chopper. Say we had somebody hurt bad enough that we needed a chopper. How would you go about it?
Manatee EMS protocol does not allow us to make that call.
Okay. So how does it happen? How do you have to do it?
We have to call 911.
Uh-huh.
They send an ambulance out. Their paramedic makes that call.
So
we can tell the dispatcher this is a trauma alert. But until that paramedic gets there.
Paramedic has to make the call.
Paramedic has to make the call.
What's the medic 5 or whatever the one is out here? If they're out of the station, what's your time out there? 15, 20 minutes
15,
maybe?
15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. So now you've lost 15 or 20 minutes for that guy who needs air support that could have been called by a county unit or by a medic. You know, it just depends on the level.
Wasn't there also the issue? Wait a minute, I'm not done.
How silly is that? That these guys are certified EMTs. That Manatee County's got to be up their ass so hard that they have to wait till they get out there.
The problem.
Why
is
that a problem with the track?
The problem. At that track, you might as well strip our EMT and our firefighter. We are a first responder.
Exactly.
No medical control.
No medical control. We are a glorified first aid person.
Right.
Well, now we have the training, but that's all we're allowed.
What do you want to say, Tim?
Tim, yeah. Give him the mic.
I was just going to say, when we call 911 out there for an ambulance, the dispatchers, they don't look at us like EMTs, ECC, Manatee ECC. They give us the same questions that if it you know,
be, you're Joe
you
Blow.
Were to call 911 from Blow. Your house.
You're Joe Blow.
I mean, they give us instructions on how to care for the patient. If he vomits, make sure you turn him to the side. Well, we have suction on board. You know, we're EMTs. They
you really are the man in the middle, right?
They don't really care.
Very, very much.
Now, how?
The bottom line is liability. The medical director for Manatee County trusts his people under him because they test them. They're employees of the county. Nothing against you guys, but he doesn't know who you are. So what do you mean a trauma alert? Well, you know, it may not be a trauma alert.
On my job, when I'm not out at the track, my regular job, I work under the same medical director as Manatee EMS. We're a private company. When they had the 400-lap wing sprint or wingless sprint race out there, they hired my company to come in. We're private, but if we do need to call a chopper, we can do it just the same way the county can because our paramedics go through the same process to become charged.
But only when you're there under that private company, right. Not and when you're there every Saturday night like you guys are.
Technically, an EMT can call a trauma alert in the county. I mean, I've done it.
Sure.
But
well, that sucks.
Normally, if I was on a truck with my company, say a BLS unit out there, we could get the chopper rolling. The paramedics would beat us before the chopper got there.
Jeff, chime in on this.
Back to Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I'm lucky. When I'm out at Bradenton, they hire AMR, Motorsports Rescue Team.
Right.
And we work under a medical director. So we can call a trauma alert. And we call 911, but we also have our dispatch a helicopter. So it's like a done deal. They're en route. The helicopter, Bayflight, you know, Aeromed is en route. So we're not limited,
gotcha.
Which is a positive thing.
Yeah. What is the, from your perspective, you can shift gears here if you need to. What are the biggest concerns that you have or the things that are most in the forefront of your mind that you have to deal with? Or do you think we need to change or improve in general terms of motorsport safety?
You have to have professionals, people that are trained. The track owners have to step up to the plate. You know, there's a lot of people on the safety teams that work for burgers and hot dogs for the night. You can't maintain quality people every weekend or night of racing. You need to pay them decently, and you have to expect minimum standards, and you have to allow them to do their job. If the promoter isn't aware of what their job is, they need to be educated.
Gotcha. Jack, we got a caller on the phone that wants to chime in. Steve,
go ahead,
you there?
Caller.
Yeah, I just I don't know if Rick Andy's there, but it's Keith Tobin. My dad lost his life at the Soto almost a year ago, and I want to say that the EMT and the racetrack staff, I honestly happen to think did one hell of a job, and he was more stable with them than he was when he went away with the paramedics.
This is Keith Thorben.
Right.
That would be me. I was he was in the pits, right? Pure stock driver?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was me and a new guy. I was with a new guy that day. I was working at the track that helped him until the paramedics got there.
You know, I'm a firm believer in, it's your time, but it's one of them things, and them guys, they're there for us, and they do a hell of a job, and people need to quit bashing them, because I've been to racetracks where there's nothing there, and you wait on an ambulance, period. There ain't even help there.
That's a driver at a racetrack.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and if you feel safe, I mean, that's one thing. But
if I didn't feel safe, I wouldn't roll over the hill. That's why I buy top-of-the-line safety equipment, and, when Rob and them in Texas say you need to do this for safety reasons, there's a reason for it. They don't just do it to make you spend money. It's your own safety and your own life.
There you go. When the drivers and people in the stands and we hear them saying stuff about what we do, basically, us out there is better than nothing out there. We're doing our job best we can.
Oh, absolutely.
If you have an issue with it or something, then go talk to somebody who might be able to get us some better equipment or make some changes instead of just yelling at people for no reason. Let people be known who can make a difference out there.
Yeah.
Don't just complain about it.
Step up to the plate and put $1,000 a week up to have an EMT sitting there. Hey, go for it, because us racers don't want the cost drove up.
Yeah, and when there's an injured racer, at that time, to us, there's nothing, the track being under red or yellow or the fans in the stands, there's nothing more important than dealing with that racer. I don't care if you have the biggest race in the season out there. I don't care how much money's on the line or if so-and-so is the super racer of the year and he's doing his thing and he just got moved back a couple spots. If there's an injured driver, that's all I care about. That's all we care about.
Hey, Red, thanks for calling in, brother.
No problem, sir.
Thank you. I'll see you this weekend, man.
All right, chief.
All right. So that's Rocket Red. His dad passed away. He had a heart attack at the track. And the one thing, his whole family came up to me, and they were so appreciative of the way these guys handled the whole situation.
Yeah, and I don't think that I know every once in a while some people will get on the condition of the safety teams at various tracks, but I don't hear too many people, anybody that bitches about the safety guys and what the job they're doing at any track. Well, they're way off base, and that's crazy. But I think really what people are complaining about more than the most complaints I hear are actually what Jeff was referring to, where there are a lot of promoters in this business, in the motorsports industry, and Craig can attest to it, Keith can attest to it, and I'm sure Jeff can, is that there are a lot of promoters who do not give safety anywhere near.
They put them at the bottom of the
they
list.
They put it way at the bottom of the list, and when people are complaining about the safety, they're not picking on the guys who are out there risking their lives to help the other guys. They're really directing it at the owners. And sometimes it gets misplaced, I'm sure, in the heat of emotion. But I don't think anybody's going to have the courage to knock what you guys do. I mean, that's
if they
quite
do, they're
foolish.
Fools.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
they're fools.
Foolish. You know, so.
Or they have an altered mental status.
Yeah.
420.
which, Jeff, by the way, there are some people on the Florida Stock Car Racing Message Board who I'm sure fit that bill. That diagnosis is correct. Remember the Thorazine we were talking about?
Yes.
I could use some.
800 IV
yes.
Right now.
Hey, yeah. What about the owner that jumps in the tow truck or jumps in the rescue truck to try and speed things up because it's taking too long? What do we do with that? Ooh.
Well,
did I open up a can of worms on that one?
Well,
hang on.
It gets into having everybody in a position that they're doing their job.
Yeah.
If it's a safety crew, if you got a record driver, if you got a you cannot do this in this day and age. You cannot do a one-man show. You have to rely on your people, delegate authority, let them, you guys are expert in that field, let you handle that,
yeah.
Let your medical people handle that, you know, all the way down.
There have been, and there's no question in my mind about this, in the last 10 years, in stock car racing, and I'm not as familiar with what, you know, the venues, drag racing that you guys work in, but in stock car racing, there's no doubt that there have been tremendous improvements both in the drivers wearing the appropriate equipment.
Tenfold.
I mean, it's been tremendous.
Tenfold.
And
yeah.
Education.
It has been a lot of improvement in the drivers and in the safety. I mean, there's miles and miles to go, but there have been a lot
of improvements. The bottom line is they observe these horrendous crashes, and we had two last year with
yes.
Top Fuel. The guys see this, and then they start talking and going, yeah, well, this guy's alive because he was wearing one of those.
Yeah.
He would not have been alive if he wasn't.
What it boils down to is if you don't have safe drivers, you don't have a good crew out there doing their thing. If you don't have safe drivers or people to treat them, you don't have racing. And if you don't have racing, you don't have fans. And if you don't have fans, you don't have money, and you don't have promoters. So if that's why when there's a wreck or something, it needs to be MS's show, not – let's get this going.
Yeah, and speaking of that, safe drivers.
Without drivers, you don't have racing. So,
what do you guys think? What do you guys think when you see the cautions out? You've just like went and attended.
I'd like to see a lot more reds.
Well, you got the caution out, and you guys have went out and responded and say it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah,
everything was cool.
Just the majority.
The next thing you know, Joe Blow number 27X goes roaring down the speedway and crashes into another car
yeah,
in the caution because he's pissed off.
Exactly.
What are you guys thinking?
You know what I think?
Go ahead. You. What do you think?
Shush,
Rob. Let him take the heat on
it's
this one.
It's frustrating when you're trying to do your thing and we're out there for the drivers, but they don't respect the fact enough to even slow down. I mean, when you're out there on the track trying to treat somebody and you got some guy over in the other turn putting the other guy in the wall because he's pissed, you know, I don't want him coming around putting somebody in the wall because he's pissed off and next thing you know, he's going into me.
And it happens.
You know?
It happens on the street, and it just happened
yeah,
in Tampa.
I mean,
you had three troopers at a wreck.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
What happened? Guy was drunk. Rammed in
I'm
the back of him.
I'm not worried about
you got three
going into burning buildings or anything. I'm worried about you know, the old lady in the Cadillac, you know, who
Jeff,
nails
what do you think,
me.
What do you think of this? Shouldn't the guys, like these guys, shouldn't the guys who are doing the deal at the track, shouldn't they have, like, okay, the tech inspector can give somebody, the race director can fine somebody for, you know, all kinds of things. Shouldn't these guys have the ability to, like, issue reprimands, fines?
We
and
do
so
in
forth?
Our series.
Well, it would be nice. That's where the infield safety director should come into play. If somebody's, you know, giving you a bunch of problems, or you think he needs to go to the hospital and he doesn't want to go, tell him he's through racing for the night.
Right.
They have to have authority out on the track.
Like I said earlier, you know, you will be evaluated by the medical personnel, the doctor, whoever, and if he doesn't clear you, you're not racing. You're black flag for the night, period. End of discussion.
I agree completely.
I think there should be somebody that, you know, I mean, you guys ought to be able to look in their eyes, and if their eyes are going all googly, you should have the authority to say, you're not getting back in that car. Can you do that?
But
do you think it
comes back to...
Rob's a pretty big guy.
I'm not going to argue with him either.
Unfortunately, whenever they're in that kind of state, their car is not going back out on the track because they've hit the wall pretty hard or they've been in a really bad wreck. They'll try and get out there. Well, yeah, but...
Duct tape and baling wire,
we'll get it back out there. That's where Tech steps in and goes, no.
Gorilla glue. You were there when Jimmy Knight backed the car into the wall, and you guys put him in the ambulance. He got out of the ambulance, climbed out of the ambulance on his own, jumped back in his race car, and bolted in and was gone before that anybody could stop him, and they let him go. And he got out of the car when he was done. I think he finished like second that night.
Yeah, we've had a few like
and
that.
And when he got out of the car, he fell over.
Yeah, we've had a few like that. What are you doing?
That's bad. So we could actually have this conversation for the next 2 weeks nonstop, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
We wouldn't accomplish anything, but maybe some people would
listen
a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be
good.
That's
it. We have to beat the drum.
You have to keep beating the drum, right?
This can be a real dry topic at times. But guess what? Come Monday morning, most of us have to go back to work.
Well, I'll tell you what. It might be a dry topic to talk about, but pictures, you go around the internet here and look at some of the pictures, like on Craig's site, and we got a few here and there on Karnak.com, but, you know, the pictures tell the story.
How many guys over here have big sponsors that they don't have to go to work the next morning or on that Monday morning?
Right.
Bottom line is that's how you pay for your race car. If you don't take care of things on that weekend, Friday, Saturday, Wednesday, whatever it's going to be, you ain't going back to work. Not generating the cash flow, so you can go racing again the next week. So, there's the show me the money deal on that one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, you know, you getting a good enough wreck on Saturday night where you break a shoulder or something, and you're out for 2 weeks. Workman's comp ain't paying for that, baby.
That's right.
So you're
Jeff,
SOL.
What are you guys? Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about your operation.
I have a couple operations actually. Like I said. My company, one of the companies I work for, AMR, provides race rescue teams either at the BLS, EMT, or the paramedic level, ALS. My company provides safety teams like Craig does. Mm-hmm. And we also do the education, and we teach for SFI.
That's cool. Cool. How do you see it? Are we getting anywhere? Is it improving?
You know, I saw the technology is improving, you know, safer walls, things like that, the Hans device.
The product that Keith showed us last week.
Yeah, the zip saw.
Zip saw.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, I carry one.
Awesome. Awesome.
I can cut a Butler-built seat almost in half with that thing, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find an easy way to get a driver out of one.
Yeah, when he first showed it to me, that looked like something to come out of the Godfather. That's a scary tool.
Rob is drooling.
What I see, though, at short tracks is guys getting out of their car wearing a fire suit that's probably Endura cotton that's been washed 50,000 times.
And dried.
And dried.
You're not supposed to dry a fire suit.
Right. It has no fire protection properties probably whatsoever. None. And they're wearing nothing underneath. They're bare-chested, all sweaty. So I know when they catch on fire, that heat's going to – they're just going to go up. So education is a big part of it.
Well, you know, absolutely right. There was about 9 years ago at Ocala Speedway, a guy in one of the lower classes like street stocks or something like that. It wasn't the big fancy high dollar classes. His car flipped upside down, flew down the front straight upside down, and he was burned pretty severely.
In front of the fans.
In front of the fans. It was really horrendous. And he had a three-layer suit at home that he wasn't wearing. He was wearing his old one layer because it was a hot night. It was a hot night, and he paid a serious price.
Going to be uncomfortable for the rest of his life because he didn't want to be uncomfortable that night.
And it is dry, and a lot of times it's controversial, and a lot of times it's not pleasant to talk about. But, you know, hey.
You know, it's a fact of life in this sport.
We sit in those trucks. Sometimes the AC's not working, but we're wearing our helmets, our hoods, our gloves, our fire suit, our long underwear,
Nomex
socks.
I don't know how you do it, man.
And we sweat like pigs, but we don't have time to put that gear on when the car's still flipping because we're responding, right, Craig?
Right.
I mean, in the summertime in Florida, it's 130 degrees down on the tracks in these asphalt tracks where they have asphalt, especially asphalt infields and places like that. Lakeland is absolutely...
Ugh.
It gets warm. I die when I'm working there.
And
it gets warm.
You guys are like, I look at the safety guy. I can't imagine how you do this, man. It's
rehab.
You lose weight?
Oh, yeah.
Then we gain it back at the end of the day.
I gotcha.
Once Rick, we take in fluids.
I tell you what, before we, I want to apologize
to
we were going to have Justin Ratliff on tonight. Justin, made his first appearance at LaSalle Speedway last weekend. He's 20 years old, and he's from Campbellsville, Kentucky. He passed Don O'Neill on the 28th lap of the 50-lap spring shootout to take the Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series event. It was his biggest win of his career. We're going to have him on tonight. But, Justin, we will get you on next week right off the bat. Promise.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And, what are you doing?
Craig, wrap this thing up here, man, because we're like up against the
Hey,
clock.
Real quick, Jack, yes. we gotta wish good luck to some guys that are up in Indiana right now, getting ready for the Little 500.
Oh, that's right, the Little 500.
Keith Butler, Shane Butler, Tommy Nichols, Troy DeCare, Doug Hevron, and I think Wendy Mathis is up there getting ready to get down on it.
All right.
This weekend,
the Little 500. Big race.
We'll have that next. Maybe we'll get one or two of those guys on with us next week.
Yep.
All right.
Of course, we're going to come back and revisit this topic.
We'll revisit and have some more people from across the country and the area on safety, and appreciate everybody coming and talking on this subject for the night.
If you have a question, comment on this show, send it to sta@shorttrackamerica1.com or call Craig Clark.
Or call Jack.
Okay.
Bother him.
Don't call me.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Another edition of Real Racing USA in the books.
Thank you guys.
Thank
you
everybody
very much.
Who showed up tonight. It was great, man. It was really great. We'll see you next Tuesday night right here live from the Snook River Grill, 7 to 9 p.m. on the Short Track America Networks. Good night now.
See ya.
When the bright lights faded to blue, I was thinking about a woman that I loved me. I never the dreams I've seen lately, they keep on turning out and burning out and turning out the same. So put me on a highway.
You can spend all your love making time. If it all fell to pieces tomorrow, you still be mine. When you're looking for your freedom, nobody seems to care, and you can't find the door. You can't find it anywhere, and there's nothing. One more time. Take it to the limit. Take it to the limit. Take it to the limit. One more time. Take it to the limit. Come on and take it. To the limit, one more time.